good evening to you, and thank you for listening to 88.2 Sanyu FM on this beautiful last day of 2006, and welcome to Under the Sun, the show where we bring you the hottest stories from Uganda's best upcoming writers. Under the Sun, a program devised by Graham Mott for the British Council. It is produced by Faith Kinani and Graham Mott. My name is Ben Mwine to present the show for you today, looking at a very beautiful story written by Nancy Ololo Roberts called Telephone Call. We'll be getting into that as well. Also talking to Ernest Bazanier in a bit, as we give you a chance to win a beautiful hamper from British Council on the show today. Just a couple of hours before we say goodbye to 2006. Actually, some people already have said goodbye to it in Australia about an hour ago. Already getting into 2007, and we'll be doing that as well. Thanks a lot for joining us here on 88.2 Sanyu FM. This is Under the Sun, brought to you by the British Council. With me today will be Nancy Ololo Roberts, whose short story we're going to listen to in just a moment. And of course, do make a point to listen to it very carefully, because there'll be some good prizes for you to win. We'll also be talking to Ernest Bazanier, who is society editor at the Sunday Vision. But for now, our story for today, beautiful story about a telephone call from Sanyu's mother, which triggers her bitter memories and raises false hopes. She travels home to her village, not knowing that what she finds there will change her life forever. Here is
our Sybil.
Telephone call.
She called out. The conductor pretended not to have heard.
Chikirida Sybil. Our Sybil.
She bellowed in a louder voice. The driver looked back at his passenger.
The conductor pretended not to have heard.
His bloodshot eyes searched. The taxi drew to a sudden stop. It threatened to roll back down the hill. There was murmuring and jeering from the passengers. The door slid open. One by one, passengers got out of her way. She clambered out. She demanded her luggage. The conductor made as if he had not heard, then headed for the boot. He pulled out the only white sack and dumped it on the muddy ground. The engine revved, belching black smoke. Slowly, the taxi began climbing the hill again. Sanyu gave the conductor one last stern look and smiled mischievously as he ran after the taxi. She looked around. Below the hill, a border labored its way towards her. She shook her head. She would walk. He pedaled in the opposite direction. Here, it was very different from the city. So peaceful. The air was filled with the sweet scent of coffee trees in bloom. She had mixed feelings about this journey. That strange phone call. It felt ominous. Yet she couldn't wait to see Mama again. It had been almost a year. Would this mean the end of a winter market? It was almost 2 years since she had been forced to set up her stall there. 2 years already. She remembered when she had completed her senior six in Kololo SS. What a relief. It had felt like ages. But then Mama had said, Sanyu, whether you have passed or not, I have no more money to pay for your education. Gone were the days when Mama would have celebrated her academic achievements. To go to Makerere University, one had to pay. Results came. She had failed. Mama had been kind. Sanyu, you must do business. I have little money for you to start. Sell in Owino. Men's clothes go faster. What? Sell in Owino? What would her friends think? And Kasule, the head boy of City High School. Sanyu is selling clothes in Owino. That would be the end. Nakazi, that girl she hated, would finally win the race. Nakazi was from a rich family anyway. She and Kasule would meet in Makerere. Her heart ached. She had sulked for a long time, but soon had given in. And now the possibility of leaving Owino? As she walked, she remembered the songs they sang to woo customers. Sometimes in Luganda, or Kiswahili, and even English.
Bei raisi! Mujje mugule! Mujje mwena! Chikumi, 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 chikumi!
The Bantu stood out. Such flat noses. The big round faces matched their generous hearts. the tall, handsome Luo, dark skinned, forbidding looks that melted away when they smiled, displaying white teeth. That reminded of a line in a poem. La Pobo, her teeth as white as milk. The Hamites were tall and smart, a lighter shade of skin, tender-hearted and loving. She hiked prices for them. Some were fools to pay. Sanyu adjusted the sack on her head. Walking allowed her to enjoy the fresh village air. It was a quiet day. Many people slept in on Sunday before going for a church service at the school. She had missed being able to balance a load on her head without being knocked sideways. Kampala was a nightmare. The blaring horns, the traffic jams. The familiar path wound its way like a snake across her ancestral graves. This was home. She had grown up here. Sanyu passed her old school, deserted now. She remembered the countless times she had walked this path. Her first day at school. How she had clung to Mama's skirts, weeping loudly when the teacher tore her away. Children watching, wide-eyed. But later she had loved school. A black mamba slithered across the path a few meters away. It stopped, raised its head, flicked its tongue, and slid into the bushes. Mama always said, a black mamba is a bad omen. The last time she and Mama had seen a black mamba cross the path, Grandmother had died the next day. Mama with her superstitions. Thinking of Mama, she remembered the telephone call last night. She had wondered who it was. Then the familiar loud voice. Sanyu, it's me, Mama. Don't you know my voice anymore? She had screamed. Even Mama could use mobile phones. The world had changed. You must come home, darling. But Mama, no Sanyu, no buts this time. Listen to your old Mama for a while. But Mama, I've always listened to you. Mama rambled on and on. She needed to learn how to talk on the phone. We are rich, Sanyu, millionaires. We can build a real house now. You don't have to sweat in Owino. Not my baby. Come home right away. The line had gone dead in the middle of Mama's call. Sanyu had tried to call back, but no luck. The night had been long. Sanyu had tossed in her bed thinking of Mama's news. They were rich. Could she go back to school? But where did the money come from? Did Mama sell land? What about all those bad stories? Was Mama aware that people had been hurt because of greed for land? Maybe Father had left her a fortune. Mama hated to talk about him. Sanyu had never insisted. She knew he was a dean in Makerere University. She had overheard Mama's friend saying how cruel he had been to her. Mama was illiterate. She had almost thrown Sanyu out of the house when she had asked about that. Since then, that chapter was closed. Sanyu had made up her mind to board the first taxi and go home. Now as she walked through the familiar path, she was shocked at the changes. Land was fenced. Even the huge mango tree that she had climbed as a child to pick up juicy fruits were gone. A white truck loaded with bricks came roaring down the hill. Mud houses were gone. Brick houses sprouted everywhere. Walls, foundations, eucalyptus trees had been cut down to make scaffolding. Men were laughing and calling insults as they worked on the roof of a semi-finished house. Sanyu missed the old quiet village. This was not what she wanted to come back to. She quickened her pace as she saw the little mud house. It was sandwiched by new buildings. Their kraal was gone. A yellow bulldozer was parked there. Her heart sank. She saw men fencing away their land. But she trusted Mama. A tear escaped her wide eyes and rolled to bless the land she had grown to love as a child. She would keep those beautiful memories. No one would dare take them away. Their door was ajar. She called out to Mama as she hauled the heavy sack off her head.
Mama, I'm home.
There was dead silence. She tried again.
Mama, it's Sanyu. Is the luomba ready? I'm hungry. We town people like to eat real food early in the morning.
She leaned the sack against the only tree that stood on the leveled ground. Mama had gone early to death. Sanyu entered expectantly.
Mama! Mama! It's Sanyu! Your baby is...
Mama lay, spread-eagled in the middle of the room. Congealing blood stained the once white mat. Her beautiful face was twisted in pain. Flies buzzed around her. A blood-stained iron bar lay close by. Witness to the cruel deed. Mama, what happened? Who has attacked you? Mama moved. She was alive.
Sanyu, darling, my baby.
Sanyu knelt to stroke her face.
I have to get help. No, Sanyu. Listen to your mama. For the last time. I was worried you'd come too late. I wanted to sell half the land. Half the land only. I wanted the best for you. The buyer said I should sell more. He persuaded me. It was for the best, he said. So I sold it. All the land. My God. I signed papers. We have to get out now. No one is safe. No, Sanyu. Listen to me. A few hours ago, thieves came. Jackals. Men who covered their faces. But I knew them. Yes, I knew them. They took all the money back. Sanyu, I'm sorry. You have come home to nothing.
Sanyu wept as she cradled Mama. In their faces was written a new anthem as her life ebbed away into the soil, into the land that had once been theirs.
Alcebo? Chikiri da Sebo!
And that's our short story for today. Telephone call from Nancy Oloro Roberts, who happens to be with us in the studio today. She grew up in Teso in Uganda, lived in Zambia for 10 years, and while there, taught literature in English, wrote and produced TV series as well as several stage plays. She returned home in 2004 and currently is working part-time with Telemedia. She is National Coordinator of the Uganda Baha'i Institute for Development. She has a BA Diplomas in Journalism and in Community-Oriented Education as well. Her first published work includes The Golden Bango and Mother Eats Her Son, which were written in 1992. And Nancy's work, Jaws, has been published by Henneman UK, and her book, The Dancing Suitcase, has been translated into French. Good to have you with us, Nancy. It's a pleasure. Also joining us today is Ernest Vazenier, who was born in Zambia, son of the soil. He grew up in Nairobi, though, went to Kisumu, Mombasa, before he returned to Kampala to attend Makerere University, beginning a career in journalism, writing a weekly column at the Crusader before joining the New Vision as a freelance writer. Now he is society editor of the Sunday Vision, also writer of Ernest Bazanier's Bad Idea. That's a weekly humor column that you must be very well acquainted with. Now in its sixth year, a collection of which was recently published under the name Ernest Bazanier's Worst Idea. So, great honor to have you with us as well, Ernest.
Thank you.
First question to you, Ernest. You've listened to Telephone Call, read the story as well. What did you think of it?
I did read the story before I came to the studio. This is the first time I'm hearing the performance. Before we even discuss the story, I think it's a very good story, but before we get into talking about how good it is, I think we should commend the actress who read it.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Was a brilliant performance. It actually made the story even more alive than it was when I just read it off the page.
Yeah. Definitely, I did a great job. We had a great set of actors that came in to do the stories and did a fabulous job. You know, the way they brought them to life.
Yeah.
What about the story itself? What did you think?
There's so many points on the of the story which appealed to me. I liked it. Was evocative. It was the sort of thing which the elements which Nancy brings to play in this story, things like the pace, the short sentences, the little details of the conversation with the conductor,
taxi conductor,
little tricks that take place in a window and so on and so forth. They make this these situations real and, you know, more vivid in the mind of the reader and the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was something that's really commendable. I like the way you get, as I read it, I feel for Sanya. I feel like I'm watching her walk towards her old house to where she meets the very shocking scene.
Yeah. You also, of course, get the feeling you almost know Sanyu and who she is and where she's come from. You have a lot about her background. I like the way Nancy takes us into her head and her mind, the intricacies of her emotions and what's in her heart and the things that she hopes for. Her disappointments come out clearly as well. I like that.
Yeah, and I think, I'm not sure whether Nancy did this intentionally or not, but I think the great thing is that it doesn't look intentional. When you see, she just remembers this one thing, and she remembers this detail about this girl at school, and then it tells you so much. It's just saying that one bit, that one sentence tells you so much about the character of Sanyu, that she's this person who had these dreams, and then she was also, you know, the usual girl who wants to grow up and be a big rich star, and then her dreams are shattered and she gets feels a bit insecure here and there.
Yeah.
You know, it tells you so much just in that one sentence, and those little things are the ones that make the story.
Well, great job, Nancy. Well, one of the things that, you know, comes up very clearly is that this is not just a fictional story. It's something that a lot of people relate very clearly with, and I understand actually has a lot of a lot to do with actual experiences that you've seen or heard of. Is that so?
Yes. Actually, telephone call is based on an incident that happened in our neighborhood. Uh-huh. And so I was very disturbed about it. And I guess as a writer, we always like to tell the stories. And when you tell your story, you hope that it draws attention to the public. So either we become cautious or we find solutions to it, because I think this is real, this is happening.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that's happening with contemporary writing now is that it has to be relevant. It has to have something to do with people's lives and touch things that touch them as well. Telephone call does that very well, bringing up a very important couple of issues. One of the big ones, of course, in this case being the whole land thing. Africa has always depended on storytelling. Do you think that as a writer, and Anest as a writer as well, and the rest of the writers that there are, can be able to use literature to influence change in policy, in people's behavior and in culture, to change things like this?
Yes, I think we should, and probably the writers don't realize the big role that they can really play in society. When I was growing up as a young girl, I grew up in a village. And my mother is a very good storyteller, and she told us so many stories orally that helped mold us and that I could identify to. So at a young age, for me, storytelling is the best way to reach somebody's heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can use this in educational purposes. We can use this to help the adults realize the challenges that we are faced with. And in a story, I mean, you're distanced, you look at the character, but at the end of the day, if the story is well told and well written, then each individual should be able to relate to it.
Yeah.
And I think the Ugandan writers have a challenge in this angle.
Anest, A lot of, because of the contemporary writing that is being done, it's not the traditional writers, the way that Chinua Achebe is used to write. Now, because of the change in society and everything, I mean, if you look at telephone call, there's a lot to do. Even in her village, she goes back to find that a lot has changed. It's no longer the quiet place with birds and everything and buildings and everything coming up. Is that influencing the way that you guys are writing now? Does that affect the style that you used to write these days?
Actually, I did see a little bit. Okay, you know, the thing with Achebe is that I did see a little bit of some similarity with Achebe in this story, though it wasn't so much that I would say that you got Achebe and were massively influenced by him, but I could see that there's influences, that your sources inside were probably the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, although different writers write in different ways, you have Achebe on this side, you have Aikwe Arma on the other. I think that most importantly, the writer has to be true to only two people, himself and his reader, or herself and her readers. I don't think, if there's a writer who thinks that this is a trend currently and I should follow the trend of having many big words, or if there's a writer who thinks that the trend these days is because the reading culture is blah, 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 I must make my stories very short and have a lot of sex in them, I think that writer is selling out.
Well said, and maybe true, but Nancy, wouldn't it also be true to say that the way society has been changing might eventually force you guys to write, you know, adjust the way you write your stories to fit into the evolving culture?
I think if the writers are caught up in the trap of commercial writing for commercial purposes, then that comes in. Because as a writer, I believe that I write from my experiences, what touches me, what I observe, what I see every day. But if you write for the sake of writing, then you get caught in that kind of trap, because then you write for what people want to read. And I really think as writers, that's not what we should be doing. We should be writing what we experience and what is real to us, like Ernest was saying, it's between you and the reader. And once we do that, then I think the writing becomes more successful. Uh-huh.
Although I think that there will be a kind of natural selection that takes place that way. There are going to be some writers who will write what they feel, and that's going to strike a chord with the public, the readers, the audience.
Yeah.
There are other writers who are going to write what they feel here.